Welcome to Starfleet Universe On-Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SFP Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just a reminder how to join us. We have a talk guest every Thursday night starting at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either dial on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. Just follow the directions. Call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the talk show website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. Or if you want to, you can also join us on the YouTube live feed. Just look for Starfleet Universe On Call and you should be able to find the live feed. Or check out Twitter, which is the SFU On Call Twitter account. That's SFUONCAL. Though I will be posting the live feed on that account. And of course, retweeted on my personal account, which is Paul Franz. So to find my Paul Franz account, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz. That's PaulFranz. And of course, I also retweeted on my Franz Games account. So you can find it there too. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is actually sfuoncall@gmail.com. It's sfuoncall@gmail.com. Also, if you want to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is Franz Games. FranzGames. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB this week. Steve Cole was busy working on blog Shapeways and other projects, also taking much care of his dearly beloved wife, Leanna, who's still in rehab where she's learning to get around in a wheelchair or using a walker, doing both of those things. Always good to use those walkers. Going to get the legs going. And Steve Petrick was busy working on SFB updates and also, of course, the Gordon Master Starship book. Gene was busy catching up on outstanding shopping cart orders and also uploading ships to Shapeways. And remember what I mentioned last week? I get your Shapeways miniatures ASAP before the prices go up. I do not want you to have to pay more than you have to. And neither does ADB. Because they're not pocketing any more money. They're getting the same amount. It's just that Shapeways now is costing more. Because Shapeways itself upped the prices for different things. And if you want more explanation about that, go listen to last week's podcast, at least the news portion at the very, very beginning. You'll be able to hear that. Oh, just a reminder, we will be having a podcast next week on the 15th, but on the 22nd, we will not. Because for those in the United States, it is Thanksgiving on the 22nd. Yes, it's a very early Thanksgiving, and I'm not sure we can be thankful for that or not. It is what it is. I think it's the earliest Thanksgiving that you can possibly have. Moving onward, the SFB Online tournaments, unfortunately, they're not going anywhere. You know, they've really been stuck, and especially the Masters, game 1.16, is not going anywhere. It's been there for months, and no one's gotten anything done. So we're kicking out one of the people, and we're looking for a substitute currently that's in progress, so hopefully we can get round one, game 116 done, because I like to play because I'm the round two opponent. So, you know, we'll just have to wait and see on that. When it comes to the round 48, round three games, you know, we are waiting on, we only have one done, but waiting for more to be completed. Moving onward and forward, when it comes to the Starfleet Warlord, I've actually been working on increasing the number of validated orders, including the ES command and others. Also, I've just been notified today that the delete game feature does not work. So I'll be working on that before I release the updated aid so that that can actually work properly and as expected. Moving forward to the library report, unfortunately, again, no progress. And I know it's November. I don't think we have much chance of completing the way I wanted to get completed as I wanted to at the beginning of the year. But, you know, it is what it is. It gets stuck. And Lord knows, I don't think we actually can ask Steve Cole to get busy and get those background images. And again, I'm not sure how many of those background images or how many of those are just that we haven't gotten around to converting them. We have not actually done a update lately just to see where progress is. Obviously, we already know there's 2,426 ships. There have actually been many updates to those ships to fix various issues that have been found, which it's always good to see that those things that have been noticed have been fixed so that we have the best quality ships out there. Of course, we're still looking at over 900 to be converted that have not been converted, and the percentage complete still is stuck at almost 73%. And with that, that is the news for this week. And it's me, it's the one, the only, the Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight, you've got me, of course. And you've got Dave and Russ. Actually, Russ happens to be here early. Thank you, Russ, for showing up. Because always, the more the merrier. I always like to see you. You're wonderful. Well, I say face, but it's not really a face. It's just text on the screen, you know, how he's doing, how he's going. But, yep. So, actually, tonight, actually, I was going to do learning about teaching, basically, Starfleet Warlord. But I totally forgot about one thing I wanted to do this week, which was a quick review of the new minis that came out at the beginning of this month, i.e. last Thursday. I didn't have time last Thursday to go through it. I just did a quick rundown. I was like, oh, here they are. But has been my thing as of late. I have been actually doing a quick review of the latest and greatest minis. You know, just a quick, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down kind of thing. We'll go over that real quick. It'll probably take 5, probably 10 minutes, maybe 15. You know, it's a very small group this week. Let me just switch over to that, because what we've got, and if you're on the stream, you can see this. We've got, as I mentioned last week, we've got the Fed, the Federation Classic Heavy War Destroyer, both in the 3125 and 3788 scale. We've got the same, well, not the same, but we have the Federation Heavy War Destroyer, which is not the classic, but again, 3125 and 3788 scale. And then the Romulan Seahawk A frigate, 3125 and 3788. A young female space dragon, Omni scale. And the Federation Classic War Destroyer Scout, big surprise. Again, same size as the previous classic War Destroyer. And same for also the War Destroyer, Federation War Destroyer Scout. Same thing. Moving on to the Wind, the Zinti built War Destroyer, which is cool. 3125 and 3788. The Tholian Heavy Command Cruiser. I like the Tholians. 3125 and 3788. The Lyran Linus Heavy Cruiser. 3125 and 3728. The LDR Linus Heavy Cruiser, only 3125. And the refitted Linus Heavy Cruiser, which is only the 3788. So, those are the new ships for this month. And also, Steve Cole did mention, I forgot to mention as part of those initial ones, that is the Zinni Escort Frigate. Both 3125 and 3788 scales. Sorry. So we're going to do a quick review. Okay. Big surprise here. If you're looking at the wonderful stream, you can see the Escort Frigate with. I'm sorry. This. I'm not sure. I'm pretty sure it's showing on the Ustream live feed, which is the special sensor looks really goofy. This, well, you know what it looks like? It looks like one of those air horns, you know, the air sirens, you know, those things. That's what it looks like. It makes it look kind of goofy. I'm not sure what you can do. I really don't sure what you can do. It might be just because of the scale that you can't do something that looks a little more like a saucer, you know, more like a radar dish and less of an air horn. But, you know, that's, as I said, you know, thumbs up, thumbs down. This is like, eh. Overall, I don't think it's the greatest of the miniatures. We got, of course, the refitted Lioness Heavy Cruiser. Of course, it has the Aztec-ing, which I think for the Lyran is pretty cool. It's more, to me, it's more like, eh. Would I buy it? Probably not, because on this heavy cruiser, I don't like the Aztec-ing all that much. Maybe it's because you have the Aztec-ing here, and then you have these here. You got the main center engine, and then you have the ones that are on the nacelles that are on the sides of the wings, and the ones on the wings. I don't know. They look, I don't know. It's don't have the greatest, in my mind, the greatest design. Now, they've got the LDR Lioness, which doesn't have the Aztec-ing, which I think for this looks much better because of, yes, you saw the same wonky nacelles for the wings, you know, for the right and left side. But without the Aztec-ing, I think it gives it more detail, you know, instead of having so much detail that it just becomes a jumbled mess, which is, I think, is what occurs with the Aztec-ing. Looks like, looks like the 3788 scale is for the Lyran. Lioness also is without Aztec-ing. And again, I kind of like it for this ship. So it's pretty much, it looks like a lot like the LDR Lioness. Oh, actually, probably big surprise that there isn't much of a difference. Now we get to the Tholian Heavy Cruiser, which overall, I kind of like these, you know, these triangular shaped pods. Kind of things that the Tholians, they were basically PC ships, police cruisers, that they welded together. And I like the way these work. I think it really is a nice design. Definitely thumbs up on this. I really, really like it. Moving onward and forward. Of course, we have the Wynn, Zinti built. And actually, this doesn't look that bad. My guess is because of the air horns. That's what they look like. Are smaller compared to the rest of the ship. I think that's the biggest issue I have with the escort frigate is that it's just so big on top. These are more like little ears versus this big air horn. You know, I like the way the cells are attached to the back end of the war destroyer. I like the way these are, you know, with the angles here. I think that angular having both up and down, I really like that. You know, overall, I think it's a really cool ship. I'm debating on this, the big bulbous head of the Zinti. I know it matches what it is on the SSD, but I guess I would like to see it stretched out a little bit. less bulbous, I'm a little more stretched out, you know, a little more, I'm not going to say sleek because I don't want sleek. I just want a little more stretched, I think, is what I would like to see. But that's me. I'm assuming people like it this way. Okay, you got the, oh yeah, now we get into these, which are kind of cool. Which is the big surprise. This is the Federation, the War Destroyer Scout. What makes it a scout? These little suckers here, probably over here, and I'm assuming the bottom two. Let me just see if I can bring that up. Yeah, down below too. Now, I think the one down below, I think that's standard. It's not because it's a scout, but it's just because it's a destroyer. Because, I mean, let's go to the regular war destroyer. Here it is. Okay, now this looks like the War Destroyer Scout. Let's go here. No, actually. Is this a scout again? Yes, yeah, a scout. Huh. Okay. This is more of the classic design. You know, I'm pretty sure it's just in the cells. Unfortunately, I don't see Matt here tonight. Yeah, let me just look at the participants for a moment. Yeah, I don't see Matt. I'm just saying that those are spotlights. No, on the police cruiser, like the Crown Victoria. Yeah. Interesting way of putting it. Scroll up. Yeah, because I think this one's just a regular War Destroyer, which is weird. Because Heavy War Destroyer, big surprise, it's got the four nacelles, and as you could see, I'm bringing up the 3D model where you actually can look at it, so that we can more easily see it. Because there's a special sensor, well, the sensor array, the bottom, but you still have the four nacelles, which is kind of cool. I see that's the classic and the regular one. Okay, that's a scout. Darn it. Because that is a War Destroyer scout, right? I just want to make sure. Yeah. Right. Oh, okay. That's a Heavy War Destroyer. Okay, versus the classic War Destroyer. Let me just. Oh, okay, yeah. So we had both the Heavy War Destroyer and the War Destroyer Scout, which is a little different when it comes to the number of nacelles. The War Destroyer only has three nacelles. The Heavy War Destroyer has four. Okay, the normal Seahawk, this actually is no big surprise here. It's a perfectly fine ship. I almost consider this kind of Aztec-ing like, but I think in this case, it actually gives it some detail that otherwise you would not see. Otherwise would be very, very bland. I think the rest, are, okay, I'll look at the classic Heavy War Destroyer. And I'm just checking to see what's the difference between the two, because I honestly don't know. Oh, okay, I think I know what it is. I'm looking at the bottom, the cells. I think that's where it really defines itself. There's the classic. I'm not quite sure what the difference is. I think maybe it's lines, you know, on the saucer. I'm sure someone will come screaming at me going, "No, it's this, you idiot." You know, so if you want to call me an idiot, please email me at sfuoncall@gmail.com. And therefore, you can tell me why I'm an idiot and don't know what the differences are. Because at the moment, the only thing I see is mainly right here, which is the saucer for the new, the quote-unquote new versus the classic. Looks like the new one has the lines on the saucer, and the classic, you don't see the lines. There's something else. Please tell me, because I don't see anything else myself. Okay, with that, that is the mini review for this week. And let me just switch over to that. Let's switch over to the chat room. So now I'm going to talk about something. Well, of course I'm going to talk about something. What I'm going to talk about actually is learning Starfleet Warlord. Now, again, through the grace of God and the opportunities that he affords me, I had one of those opportunities to actually teach someone to play Starfleet Warlord. I start to teach someone about Starfleet Warlord and answer questions about it, because here's the gotcha. My dear, dear sweet friends. And that is, I've never played, I've never played Starfleet Warlord. Actually, I've played like two or three turns of Starfleet Warlord before I actually took over for Bruce Grawl. Bruce Grawl actually ran a few turns for me just to introduce me to the game, which, you know, is quite cool. And I think it's a neat game where it's like a 4G, but, you know, overall. And of course, one of the big things of Starfleet Warlord is diplomacy and interaction with other players. This is not one of those single player games. It's not really designed to be a single player game. Now, the one thing I did do for this person that I was teaching, same guy I was teaching SFB the other week, and that is I created what's called a learning game. A learning game is basically a 3x3 game where you're surrounded by monsters / pirates. You know, NPC corporations. So the whole idea was just to have, you know, start out with a plain simple sector. There will be a monster in your home sector, like a normal game, so you can kill him without, you don't even have to leave your sector at all if you don't want to. But also, the whole idea is that it's going to teach you what to do and not to do before you actually get yourself killed. And in this case, it would be required. You would basically lose money, because this learning game, I'm running it for free. Is what I'm doing. It's relatively easy. And the tough part about any game is setting up takes a bit of time. Now, obviously, that's one thing I probably should look into, which is to see if there is a easy way to automate that process so I can create games relatively quickly. And if I keep doing these learning games, I will definitely be doing that. And that's something I'm going to actually post up to see if anyone's interested in a learning game. And I'll describe what it is and basically, it's for new people, not for people who have played for a while. It's for new people. Now, I'm going to do is I'm going to read the introduction into Starfleet Warlord, just so that we can have kind of a common theme. Okay. Now, Starfleet Warlord is a game that's set within the Starfleet universe, a comprehensive game universe, including such games as Starfleet Battles, Federation Empire, and Starfleet Missions, Prime Directive, and other games. What has made the games of Starfleet Universe so successful is the detailed historical background, which is consistent throughout all the games. Obscure and irrelevant roles in one game are reflected with considerable impact in the other games. Historical episodes in one game create opportunities and limitations in other games. Players switch back and forth between games in considerable ease, since the same thing works the same way with limits, whatever game it appears in. Starfleet Warlord, however, is not a historical game. Set within the virtual reality of the Starfleet universe, based on a fictional event within this fictional universe. And why 216, so the fictional history goes, Tri-Video producer Olivette Roche created a massive 24-episode miniseries entitled Warlords of the Cloud. In this miniseries, Ms. Roche postulated a struggle to explore the greater Magellanic Cloud 20 years in her future. Being a dramatist rather than a scientist or a soldier, and having perhaps rather exaggerated view of the secret intelligence services of the Federation and other races, empires, should be. Sorry, Jean. She took considerable liberties with reality, creating fictional events, people, and technology. For example, the entire concept of warp gates existed only in her miniseries and not in the quote-unquote real universe. So it's played rather fast and loose with the political history, postulating squadrons of renegade Andromedan and LDR ships that never existed, and turning the computer simulated frack ships into real computer manned warships. Olivette assumed that the corporation would exploit the peaceful and otherwise happy inhabitants of the various planets of the GMC, most of which looked remarkably alike, even when from radically different planets. That's fiction for you. This was apparently intended to make the point that regardless of their actual appearance, they were alike in being exploited. And goes forth and flew on and so on. Now, when it comes to Starfleet Warlord is an asynchronous game where it's considered a play-by-email campaign. So that what happens is that you would submit your orders, you submit your orders, and then you get the results at a later point in time. Currently, I'm trying to keep up with the learning game, which is relatively it's small. It's single person. So as soon as that Justin gets in his turn, I can process it and send it out. And right now, it's a single day turnaround, which I'm sure some people in the Starfleet Warlord community are screaming, "We'd like to have that in our games." Yeah, well, if you can get everybody in a game, you know, all, 8 to 16, maybe more players all to do that, you know, single day turnaround, that'd be great. I'd be happy. You know, I'd still be charging them the same amount of money, $4 a turn, so I'd be able to make more money per week, which costs people more money per month, which I'm not sure people would be quite interested in doing. But at the same time, you know, I know some people would like to have a more consistent turnaround, you know, where people actually turn their orders in time And then we can just continue on, you know, 2 weeks, a nice pace. So, there are some obvious things that the Starfleet Warlords need to be done, and I have not done so far. Number one, I need to learn the rules, because when I was being asked these questions by Justin, I'm realizing I don't know a lot of these rules. Some of them are, and it's not even about not knowing the rules. Some of it, I don't know some of the concepts. For example, legendary officers, from according to the rules. Let me just see if I can get this. I think that's section 4.1. Nope, I'm wrong. Let me just look at that's 4.16. Okay. So this is 4.1.16, not 1. Okay. Because it says at the beginning that legendary officers are individuals who do some inherent skill or ability, truly excel in their particular job. Each turn, you will locate one or more legendary officers for future use by your corporation. This happens automatically with no effort or cost on your part. At the start of the game, you will be provided one officer of each type except the captain. That's part of the initial corporation setup. Officer normally signs the ship, but it keeps on going describing this. Now, I'm not sure if Warlord actually you get each turn you get added to your pool a legendary officer or what. See, this is the kind of stuff that I don't know that I really should know. So that's one of those things. So I really need to read through these rules and understand some of the concepts overall, so that I can actually describe things. Obviously, currently, one thing that I just did for Justin, which actually I allowed him to join the Starfleet Warlord group, because I actually have the group kind of locked down. You have to request to join the group, and I have to then go and agree to let you in. The whole idea there is that I'm super, super cautious about spammers. Because the only reason I'm really cautious about spammers is because of the previous unmoderated, unregulated forum that was used for Starfleet Warlord become a freaking trolling ground of crap. Now, same time, I think part of that can be blamed on that it did not require a actual user account to post. So, you know, it's obviously that automatically just invites trolling and crap. While, you know, the Starfleet Universe discussion board and Facebook both require a quote-unquote identity, you know, of some sort. Does it have to be a true identity? No. Actually, Facebook says that they do, but they don't really. You know, if you can actually, I could probably create an account called John Smith. And as long as I logged in as John Smith, you know, I could do whatever I want and not really have to verify that I am John Smith. You know, because my name is not John Smith, for those of you out there who don't know. So, but I let him in because of there's a lot of people there who are a lot more knowledgeable about Warlord than I am, and I'm the guy running it. Now, there are certain questions that are not even answered by the rulebook, and those are only answered by looking at the engine code. That is going to be the way it is for certain things, because certain things are not meant to be known up front. Some of it, I've revealed when people ask about it, like how early on when I took over. Here's the thing. It's driving me crazy about running Starfleet Warlord, because of if a player gets an aberrant result, i.e., that it's like, oh, that should not happen. Overall, I will have to agree with you that overall, when it comes to the percentage chance of that occurring, is very small. But it is a valid result. It is possible that this could happen, i.e., you have a opponent who has less ships, less BPV, less attack factors, you know, smaller defense factors, and they could still win. There is that possibility. Is it probable? No. Could it happen? Yes. And that was one thing I got. Like, this is one person that plays Starfleet Warlord was complaining about. It's like, I should have beat him. I was 10%, 10 or 20% above him when attack versus defense. So I should have won. In theory, yeah, you had a better chance of winning than he did. Is it automatic guarantee that you will win? No, it's not. Because part of it is there are randomness applied to each and every attack. It's not flat out, okay, you have the more attack factors versus your opponent, and you automatically win. No, there's some randomness, i.e. die rolls, that are part of Starfleet Warlord when it comes to your attacking. You know, your attack factor is added up and then averaged out. I'd have to look. It's been a while, but overall, you know, I think it's averaged out, and then it does a die roll on each one of them, you know, to see, okay, how much of that actually you get to attack. You know, so is it possible that you rolled ones, i.e., you know, the least amount of damage, and he got very little damage against them? Yes. And he rolled maximum damage against you? Yeah, it is possible. So likely? No. But in some cases, you don't need that much to defeat somebody. Doesn't need a good round or two, and then they fall behind. You have the greater attack factor, and you could win, you know, or you could lose, you know. But okay, that's one thing I need to do. So I need to learn how the things about the game. That's number one. Number two, it's come obvious to me that I have to get the aid up to date. You know, there's some issues. Some I need to see how much of the orders I can add into the aid to a certain degree, because there are so many possible orders that are in the game that I know I'm going to miss some. What I'd like to do is actually put it out there, get as many as I can possibly get, and then release it so that people can play it, can use it, and it can actually be more accurate when it comes to identifying what orders are invalid. Next, that's one thing I've not checked out, which is one thing with the engine, if you type in get C, as in I think it's get cloak, that's considered invalid. But I think it still runs just fine. Because otherwise, I'm sure I would have heard it. So, that's another thing. I have to update the aid and release it. That's going to be a little more interesting this time because of... I forget what it is. There's a website which will validate, well, check an executable to see if it actually is infected with a virus. And I was uploaded, I think was, I forget if I uploaded the aid or uploaded the online client. SFU online client. I'm not sure which one I uploaded. Because of, there has been some false positives where, I forget whether it was, I don't know, I don't remember which antivirus said it, but it said, oh yeah, you know, we have this is disinfected. And I think in some cases, it sees that there's an embedded version of Java in the application and automatically goes, nope, it's infected because there's a hidden runtime, Java runtime inside it that we don't know what it's going to do. It must be a virus. No, it's not a virus. It's just my application is a Java-based application. So that's one thing I would have to do. Another thing that I definitely noticed that I have to do is I need, after I learn it, what I really should do is create some tutorials, you know, on not just how to use the aid. Using the aid, that's simple. That's pretty easy stuff. But obviously, I think I have a couple tutorials already up there. I have to go check to see what I currently have up there when it comes to Warlord tutorials. I think I have, actually, I'm pretty sure I don't have them on YouTube. I'm pretty sure I just have them uploaded on the website. And that's fine. Obviously, that's one thing I probably also should look at, which is to see how many times it's been downloaded. You know, get some metrics. Now, the tough part about getting the metrics when it comes to MP3 files and video files is that invariably you'll get the... Kind of, it's not really a full download, but it's a partial download. And the question in that case, is it because someone's is restarting, in the case of a podcast, restarting where they left off? Or is it there's a new session, so they're going, this is the second time they're listening to it, or is there a specific section that they were said, oh, you have to check out this section of the podcast, that, you know, either because of their story was on that podcast. I'm talking about my wife's podcast. Or, or that someone else pointed out, oh, you got to listen to this portion because it really speaks to me and so forth. You know, I said, so that means I have to have it. I got to check to see what I got there, but I'm pretty sure all I got is some tutorials on how to use the aid. But I don't think that I actually have it so that it covers the whole mechanics of, you know, entering the orders, saving the game file, emailing the game file, and then I accept the game file, in which case, you know, I would just kind of go over that quickly to say, you know, okay, it gets submitted, okay, then you wait for your turn to come back, which is basically the way it works. And then after you get your turn back, okay, then you take that, you import that file again into the aid, and then you move forward on that. And obviously, and also the email itself actually has the turn report for that game, which is actually quite nice, because then if you want to, you can print out the turn right from any email program, which is good, you know. So I think that's, so those two things, you know, obviously learning the rules, adding some tutorials on how to play Starfleet Warlord would be, I think, really a good thing. Another thing is, obviously, if this, I'm gonna wait, because Lord knows I've got to be careful about this. And that is, invariably, if I actually I announce, oh, this is an idea I have, and if I announce that idea to people, they automatically think, oh, you're doing it now. It's like, no, it's an idea I have that I plan on implementing in the future. And I'm just, what I'm looking for at that point is I'm looking for people to actually be interested and to see what kind of interest that I have on this idea. That's the first thing. And after that, then if I have enough interest, then I'll actually work on that idea and complete, create a product around that idea or additional functionality around that idea. Yeah, Ross, I think Dave's still watching the game. He's watching the Steelers versus Panthers game. It's 38-14 with the Steelers winning. And this is the middle of the third quarter. So those are the kind of things that would have to work. And as I said, I have to, if everything goes according to plan, now I probably will start offering these learning games, because I know I wanted to have those automated game system so far. It looks like that's not going to happen for this year. But if I can, at the very least, get some learning games going for those new players, to the very least, instead of having them sitting around and waiting and doing nothing, have them involved in the game, playing it, learning it, without the cost, because in my mind, the important thing is to have it to be without cost. Because of, if you make it cost up front for a learning game where they're trying to learn the system, you're just going to turn them off, in my mind. The whole idea of having a free learning game is to encourage people to learn about the game, to get excited about the game. So then they go, oh yeah, I want to play against somebody else. That was the whole idea of having an automated game that you could do online that actually wouldn't even require the aid. I would like to have that to be, that'd be perfect. But currently that's not quite available. So, but at the very least, I figure a learning game is a good compromise. It's relatively small. It's really easy to run, as long as you're doing aid-based turns. And I think if I was going to run any more learning games, that would be a requirement. You must use the aid. I will not have the time to enter in orders. You must use the aid to help you to create the orders that you have, because the aid is there to, number one, to validate your orders. Number two, it's a tool to help you do better. There, obviously there are certain things that are in the aid, especially the latest version of the aid that's currently available. It's quite a few. It's like over a year old, pretty sure. But it has certain features like summarization. So you can tell what's the strength of your ships in the different hexes. That kind of thing, which was available in the DOS version of the aid tool. But, and I added it to the GUI, the Java-based version a little bit later on. And I think that's important. It's one of those things that people said that they missed, which is one of the reasons why I added it. So if I can get people involved in those learning games, I think I will be able to get more people involved in the game itself. But I want to at least run this one through November, maybe, or if everything seems to be turning out okay with the learning game with Justin, I might actually open myself up to having more learning games available. There's obviously there's a limited number of learning games I'd be able to physically run per per day. So what I'm thinking about overall is maybe two, maybe three games I can run per day. But, I think that should be enough to keep most people busy. So, with that, actually, I think I'm going to draw it to a close a little bit early this evening because I don't want to draw it out and I don't have another topic off the top of my head that I would want to discuss. We did definitely talked about the new minis and some of the good ones. Obviously, the ones I like, which is the Lyrans without the Aztec-ing. And the Tholian, the Tholians, the heavy cruiser for the Tholian. I really like that one too. And I had a nice discussion here about Starfleet Warlord itself, and helping to teach people how to play Starfleet Warlord and some of the things I need to do to help encourage people to learn Starfleet Warlord and give people the best shot of actually learning this game. Because I think Starfleet War, again, Lord knows, you guys have heard me say this so many times, and that is that I truly see Starfleet Warlord being the future when it comes to gameplay and that kind of thing, because it still has all the background material for Starfleet battles, the Starfleet universe, including some of the tie-ins to Star Trek and all that kind of thing, without it trying to be a board game. It's more of a campaign. Now, the question is turning that into like a board game of sorts, but I don't think that's, in theory it's possible, in theory it's not possible. When it comes to Starfleet Warlord overall, the biggest issue with Starfleet Warlord is the way, it's the basis of it. The current basis is based on information and finding out information about the different sectors around you and the different players and where they are and things like that. That's what Starfleet, that's part of playing Starfleet Warlord. Versus when you have a board game, you know where people are. You can't hide them. So I'm not sure, what kind of things could be done for board game or convention play. Obviously, convention play, you could, if people have the electronic devices to do it, you actually could have them. What I think would be really cool is if people could actually submit their orders and I could actually process them there at the convention, and then I could project them up on the wall and say, I could at the very least give people, here are the standings of the current game. Who's winning, who's losing, maybe give them a little more information about what's going on without giving away everything. Things like that, which I think would be kind of cool. I'm not sure if it would be doable, but, it's a neat idea. So I think with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.